Hello, listeners. Jordan here. I just want to let you know that you can listen to Nighttime early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
You are tuned to the Nighttime Podcast, focused on the fringe of Canada.
Listeners of Nighttime, tonight's episode, we're going to be revisiting a past story and catching up with one of Nighttime's most memorable guests. But this isn't going to be your typical update episode. This is going to be a wild one. In fact, when preparing this episode, the thought occurred to me that this is probably the most Nighttime podcast episode of all. So many elements of what makes a story suitable for this show seem to have suddenly converged and combined themselves into a mess. It all starts back in February this year. I found myself connecting with a very nice lady from Ontario named Candace, who was having a bit of a problem. Well, I suppose Candace was having two problems. The first was that strange lights and bizarre objects were appearing over her home nearly every night. And the second problem was that she didn't know how to get the photos and the videos of said objects off of her phone and onto her computer. So I offered to help her with both issues. The photo part, that was a breeze. After a couple of minutes of tech support, Candace was able to share her photos in the UFOs Above Canada Facebook group. The supernatural problem, however, the best I could do was offer her a platform to share her unusual story of reoccurring UFO sightings. The platform, of course, was an episode of Nighttime called Who or What Keeps Appearing Above Candace in Onagate. In that episode, I spoke to Candace and her then-friend Onagate about what they'd been dealing with, and I assumed that was the end of it as far as Nighttime was concerned. But 6 months after releasing that original episode, I woke up to a flurry of emails, messages, notifications, and even some Google alerts all referencing my past episode with the UFO experiencers from Ontario. But these messages weren't at all about UFOs. Instead, they referenced disturbing allegations being made against my past guest, Onagate, a man who had introduced himself to me as a deeply spiritual Indigenous man who followed a traditional and natural way of life. Well, based on what a newly released CBC investigation into the man known as Onagate revealed, he's been keeping a whole lot of secrets. We'll get into those secrets shortly, but needless to say, I sent a message to Candace and I invited her to again join me on the show to tell me what the heck has been happening over the last 6 months. Now this is where it gets even more interesting. Candace agreed to share the story of Onagate's lies and the resulting betrayal. But just like when we first connected, she was having a problem. As it turns out, Candace isn't in Canada. She's in the Central American country of Belize, dealing with a family emergency. The situation that brought her to Belize, however, wasn't paranormal, but it's almost equally unbelievable. What Candace hadn't told me when we first spoke is that her daughter is an internationally known socialite who had married into one of the richest families in the world, the Ashcrofts. And what does that have to do with Belize? Well, that's where it gets complicated again. Candace's daughter, Jasmine Harton, was recently arrested in Belize and charged in the shooting death of one of the country's top cops. And to make matters worse, Jasmine and Andrew Ashcroft's relationship just ended, and it is an ugly breakup. The kind of ugly that seems only possible when one side of the relationship is a billionaire, and the other side is Candace's daughter. So yeah, this episode is going to cover a lot of ground. So let's not waste any more time and get right into it. Tonight, in this episode of Nighttime, we are again going to be joined by frequent UFO experiencer Candace. And our topic is the story of Candace and Onagate, but more specifically, a story of lies, betrayal, cultural appropriation, a shooting death, the Ashcrofts, of course, UFOs. When we first talked, I think it was about 6 months ago. At that point, your life was taken over by strange sightings of unexplained objects above yourself and your then partner, Onagate. Yeah. So let me just start by asking this. It was almost nightly sightings that you were seeing these things and photographing them. Has that changed?
I caused it to change. I had contacted you for help, if you recall, and I was beginning to feel very overwhelmed. Things progressed. I moved from the country, and I actually thought when I moved to the city that I wouldn't see them anymore, but they followed me, and they're nightly. Every night I could go out and see them, and I took pictures in the city as well. And it started getting a little scary for me because I really was hoping. I had written numerous well-known people who talk about UFOs, like all kinds of people. And I was feeling overwhelmed. And then I think it was in March, my daughter from Africa flew to Canada and joined me in my house, and she saw it too. And at this point, this particular night really hit me. They sent me a picture of a heart, a perfect heart, and then a picture of themselves, three of them in the picture. And they look demonic. You know, I couldn't escape that feeling in my gut that there was something not quite right. In the meantime, I had contacted, I don't know if you've ever heard of Reverend Bill Bean. He consistently said to me that he felt they were chariots of God. But in myself, I was feeling very uncomfortable. And then my granddaughter joined me. And she saw them. We came home one night, and the star, quote unquote, was way up higher than usual. And I said, oh, there it is. It's up there. And she said, well, can you take pictures then? And I said, I looked at it and I said, kind of annoyed almost, I said to it, if you want me to take pictures of you, you're going to have to come a lot closer than that. And I went in the house. And as she's standing outside, the thing dropped down about 3 miles. Of course, I went out and took pictures. But then what started to happen is my other daughter, who was visiting, swears on her life that two gray alien beings were at my front door. And she said one was inside my house looking through the blinds, and the other was on the outside of the door. And she was so scared that she didn't want to come back to visit me.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, okay, this is really, I just didn't know what to do. I'd asked for so much help, so many people. I was hoping to get some sort of direction, guidance. And so what happened was, Reverend Bean always said that if they're craft that are negative energy, rebuke them in the name of the Lord. And that being a woman of faith, I do embrace that spiritual side. And so I walked out. I was finally sick of it. But I walked outside and I looked at them. And I said, you know what? If you're of the light, I welcome you. But if you're of the darkness, I said, in the name of Christ, be gone. And I rebuked them. They left.
Wow.
They left.
And how long ago was this that this happened?
It was last April. Yeah.
And since then, have you had any sightings, or did you believe that this stopped it?
Oh, I see them all the time. Mm-hmm. Even here in Belize. I feel like I'm so trained now, I can look up, oh yeah, there's one. And in conversation with different people here, I'll say, watch this, and I'll take a picture. And I'll say, look at this. And it's the same thing. It's the cube. It's the same thing. So now I just feel like, I know what you are. I know what you're doing there. I don't know why you're here. I see them all the time, and I just try to make people aware that they're there and they're watching us. What their intentions are, I don't know. But I do know that one experience I had when I said to them, rebuked them, and they left, to me that was pretty powerful.
Yeah, in terms of it implying that they had ill intentions and that it was a dark force?
A dark entity, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That brings me to the next big update in your story, the idea of possibly these being some kind of dark forces, because when we last spoke, you were joined by Anagate, at the point when we last spoke 6 months ago, it was a positive situation that you were both in, but a whole lot has changed since then. So maybe why don't you talk me through what led to Anagate not being with you tonight for this interview? How did this happen?
The time that we were at the lake, and for the entire time that I've known him, which is only probably 2 years altogether, our relationship was as friends, just as friends. But when I met Anagate, the man that he presented himself to be was a spiritual leader, a person of unity that had no prejudice against anyone. I respected him highly for that and learned a lot, I thought, from him. However, when we moved to the city, as soon as we got back to the city, he started to act strange. And his stories weren't jiving. He'd tell me all these stories about in reference to his life and time, but the story started to interlap so that the time didn't make sense. And you know, when a person lies, a lie doesn't flow. A lie is jagged. And that's what I started to see, is just over and over again. And I started questioning him. And then one day he's not supposed to be able to read or write. And he told me he was illiterate. And so forever, I was helping him with his banking, his bills, everything. I was helping with everything. And then one day he was watching, the TV was on, and it was a foreign language and had subtitles in English. And he read it. He read it and understood the subtitles. And I thought, he can read. He can read. And I thought, that's something really funny. Well, then one day, I came home and he was drinking and with a friend. He brought this lady in my house. This is bizarre, but I might as well tell it. And the lady said to me that she was a witch. And she stood in my kitchen and said to me, you know, most people are afraid of me because of all the power that I have. And in the meantime, Anagate knows my faith and he knows what I think of that. And yet he brought this woman into my house and he was drunk and he's doing drugs and all this stuff. And then he started lying to other people about me and making out like I was some kind of a jealous girlfriend. And it was shocking. Like I couldn't believe. Then he started, it's just the inconsistencies, and it grew to a point where it was absolutely scary for me. He actually was frightening me now. And I changed the locks on the door illegally because I was scared. I was scared. What is he going to do? What is he going to bring home? I was not trusting him at all. Well, soon after that, a very close friend of mine contacted me and said to me, there's something you need to see. And all she said to me was, Google his name. And I Googled it. And there I found it on a Twitter page where he's been saying for years that Anagate was a fake. And he had posted an RCMP police report on the website. I got a copy of that report and showed it to a friend. This friend showed it to some other people to see if it was valid. And it turned out it was. And the next thing we knew, it was posted on Facebook under Canada Creep Watcher, and that came out. Well, even so, the Indigenous population, he had them so convinced that it was all a lie and that he's just a victim of slander that nobody believed me. I was shunned everywhere I went by everybody and treated horribly, to be honest. Then the CBC contacted me to say they were investigating him. And as you know, the report came out on the news, 2 days ago, about his fake Indigenous roots, that he's a white guy. He never was a Native.
What you're about to hear is an excerpt of a conversation Anagate's brother had with a CBC journalist.
I would not allow somebody that's not truly Indigenous to take away from a true Indigenous person.
He says he was a survivor of the 60s scoop.
Absolutely not. No way.
He says he escaped from boarding school authorities and was hidden and educated by his grandfather for 17 years.
Our grandfather died when I was probably one, or maybe I wasn't even born then. So that scratches out on my mom's side. And as my father's side, we had absolutely nothing to do with him. So which grandfather is he talking about?
Yeah, Onondaga is not his name. It was, he had a very...
Forrest Blanchard. You see, he told me that he was taken at 5 years old by the 60s scoop, and that they nailed his feet to the floor, and that he suffered incredible torture and all this kind of stuff. He told me that his wife was dead, and that he was he told me all these stories, and it turns out he's got I found out today, actually just today, he has a wife. She's still alive in Canada, and yet he apparently married this other woman in Minnesota. I mean, there's just so many things coming out. And then I was so surprised to see on the police report that he actually had sexual assault charges.
His police, that police report you're talking about, I saw that as well. And it's not your typical police report. It's sexual assault, violent crime, break and enter. Right? Like, it's a...
Scary.
Yeah.
It was really scary. And I mean, the first thing I thought was, oh my God, I'm so lucky that nothing happened to me, because I was alone with him for months. And I was just shocked. When that report came out, a lady started to come forward actually online, and I read some of their testimonies. And one lady said that he'd abducted her when she was 17 off the street. And then another lady came out with a similar story, but it happened to her in Kingston when some of the Indigenous spiritual leaders had handed her over to Onondaga as a spiritual leader to help her, and he'd attacked her as well. And she was too ashamed to tell anybody.
Wow. So he managed to also convince some Indigenous, like actual Indigenous people were convinced by him.
Yes.
In some aspect, it seems.
Yes.
What, and I've also saw he like won awards for Indigenous arts from like a university.
Yeah. He told me that he worked at the university teaching Native language. He received grants through the government. I don't know how much money they paid out, but whatever it was. And so he used this fake front life to get himself ahead. He always portrays himself as this poor, poor victim, and he'd get everyone feeling sorry for him. And I felt sorry for him too. He had me convinced that everyone was just against him. And, you know, he used my heart.
His claims of Indigenous heritage, the CBC article makes it sound like that isn't true, at least according to his family. Do you know if he actually has any Indigenous like blood or background? Do you know anything about the end result of that?
I don't. I only know what everybody else knows. What I've read, the claims that he has no roots whatsoever. He has introduced me in Kingston. He introduced me to a lady who he told me was his sister, and she's Indigenous. Maybe that's not even true. I don't know what's true anymore.
Wow. But when you knew him, you, in your mind, he was an Indigenous man who was brought up in that culture.
Yes. And he told me that,
without any question.
Yeah. And he told me he'd lived in the bush and hid for years. And he told me that his wife was dead. That he was looking for a new wife, just all kinds of things like that. And then today I find out he has a wife that's still alive. That was shocking to read. Shocking. I read that myself today. I'm still processing it, to be honest. I'm still processing.
Yeah. And then, I can only imagine.
You know, and it's so disappointing because, you know, you wish people well. And for instance, he has a coloring book he's done because he is a good artist. And this was an indigenous coloring book called, I forget the name of what it is, but I read today on Facebook, they've removed all his books now. I'm sure that this has affected so many people, that put so much trust in him.
What do you think his motivation was? Like, when you hear the story of somebody who has this fake identity and they're appropriating the different cultures, like, I would expect it's the kind of story where he was trying to get money from you and stuff, but it doesn't sound like that was the case. It sounds like, if anything, you were just kind of looking after him.
Yeah. And actually he was very generous with his money. He didn't try to do that with me. If anything, though, just this play, this role he was playing, mm-hmm. to get sympathy I actually don't even understand, to be honest. I can't understand that mind work. I don't mm-hmm. get it.
Mm-hmm. And when I read the CBC article, it's there's not really much room for debate, because they managed to get in touch with his family, who are like, no, like, we weren't affected by the 60s scoop. That's a very easy lie to uncover. I don't know
what he was thinking. I don't absolutely know. I mean, I watched that myself just today while listening to his brother talking about their family, and how it makes you wonder how he thought he could get away with this. And the only other thing I can think is he's extremely mentally ill. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. So, it's just bizarre.
Yeah. So you had told me about that you changed the locks. You separated yourself from him, knowing that it was, you know, either on safe or pretty close to it. How did he react when you confronted him to, like, Anagate? Like, what is the story with all, like, this doesn't add up. What is the story?
He wouldn't look me in the eye. He would not talk to me one to one. Instead, he went to his circle of people that he had gathered around him, this particular circle of people, and they were indigenous people, and had them convinced that I'm the Wicked Witch of the West. And I said to him, they don't know, do they? You've hid that from them. You've hid that. And so he plays these roles wherever he goes. He twists it to his advantage, whatever his intention is.
So did redemption come in the form of this CBC article, or is that what it took to show them?
For me, redemption came when I saw the RCMP report. Mm-hmm. And then I did a little research myself, easily found his high school picture, which means he could read and write all along. Because if he could, it was just too much to understand how a person could act this way and why. Why? I was with him alone for months, and I listened to all his stories. But then the stories started to interlap, and they didn't make sense. And so I'd question him, and then he wouldn't have an answer for that. And so my flag started to go up a little bit. I started thinking, there's something fishy here. There's something going on here. And that was when it all started to happen.
Wow. Now, one part of the story that he couldn't have faked is when you both became close, is when the UFOs appeared, or when the objects you saw appeared. Like, how does it's such a two crazy things to stick together. Does your bad experience with Anagate, or whatever his name is, affect the connection you have with whatever's above? Like, how do you put all this together?
What I'm wondering, after I rebuked them and they left, I then started thinking about it. And I wondered if he is just so evil that his energy brought that. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm just speculating. I don't understand anything mm-hmm. more than anybody else on this planet. You know, I can only speculate that energy, was it him? I don't know. I don't know. But I can tell you that since mm-hmm. he's been out of my life, the peace I have inside, there's no turmoil, there's no problems, there's no anxiety anymore, which I found that there was a lot of that mm-hmm. when we were together, because I was always constantly helping him with problems and his own life, you know. Mm-hmm. So I find that it was a lesson for me, a big lesson.
They haven't gone away. Anagate is a whole bag of fraud and complicated lies. Here's the next big update. So we're talking now with you, and you are in Belize, as opposed to Ontario or Hawaii, where you typically spend your winters. This is this whole other complicated situation. Tell me why you were in Belize. What brings you there?
My daughter is Jasmine Harton, and her spouse was Andrew Ashcroft, who's the son of Lord Michael Ashcroft. A part of my life I don't tell a lot of people about. I lived a very normal, quiet life in Kingston. But what no one knew is, although my daughter's a multimillionaire, I didn't expect her to just shower me with money all the time. She's the kind of daughter, for instance, when I needed a car, she threw me $5,000. Go buy a car, Mom. You want that car? Sure, have that car. You need this or that. She always has been there for me. And when on May the 28th, she had a horrible accident, her friend, the superintendent, Jamat, was having personal problems. And she invited him to San Pedro in Belize on the island where she lived in Ambergris Key. And she gave him a suite in her hotel. Her establishment was called the Grand Colony. And that night, they'd all gone out and socialized. But he'd been drinking all day. And it was midnight or close to midnight when they walked out the back door of the estate. And there's a pier right in the backyard. And they sat there. And he was, because she'd had some problems in the past with people trying to hurt her, he felt that she needed to protect herself. And so he was showing her this gun. And he had neglected to check the chamber. Oh. And so he's showing her, telling her how to put the pieces in. And the gun went off. And he was shot in the head. She herself tried to resuscitate him. She called the police for help. She called everyone for help. And they came, and then she was arrested and in a lot of trouble. And so when I received the phone call from her, once she got out, they had her in Hattieville prison. And I received, she got out. I got a phone call, and all she said was, "Mom, I need you. I need you with me." And I was on the next plane. I've been here to support her, to help her through all of this.
This morning, socialite Jasmine Harton is out on bail on the charge of manslaughter by negligence after the death of one of Belize's top cops, Henry Jamat. Harton is the longtime partner of Andrew Ashcroft, the son of British billionaire Lord Michael Ashcroft. The family recently opened a new upscale hotel in Belize. In court, the prosecution telling the judge, Harton admitted she had been drinking when Jamat handed her his gun and asked her to practice unloading it. That's when prosecutors say she told police the gun went off accidentally, hitting the father of five behind his right ear. Jamat's body was found in the water nearby. The judge ordering Harton to pay the equivalent of just under $15,000, surrender her passport, and keep to a strict curfew.
So just to understand how complicated it is, your daughter's in a country where her ex is one of the most powerful people of one of the most powerful families. I've read news reports where it seems like a lot of people are worried about your daughter being in that country because of the influence her ex and his family have.
They basically own the entire country. And in this country, money buys loyalty. Mm-hmm. And she realized the family was distancing themselves from her rather than supporting. And that's been the issue mm-hmm. that we're facing. I'm sure people have seen, we went to see the children. I brought gifts from Canada. I wanted to see the grandchildren. And so we went to San Pedro to see them. and walked up to her establishment where her own security barred her from going in. Her own security. And she's saying, what is wrong with you people? At this point, Andrew showed up. And we were saying to Andrew, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? What's going on? She just wants to go into her own apartment and get some personal belongings because she had nothing. And she wanted to see her baby. And he barred us from that. And the officer standing there, I looked them right in the eye and I said to them, do your job. My daughter is asking you to escort her to her apartment to gather her personal belongings. And they looked at me and smirked and refused to move because they were under orders not to.
In the way it's set up now, she can't be in Canada waiting trial. You're stuck in Belize and you're going to stand by her there.
No matter what.
I had no idea your connection to your daughter, to the story. I had read about it in passing and it wasn't until you mentioned it to me. I was like, this can't be, but your daughter's described as like, for people who don't know, she's described as simply a socialite, the way you would describe, like, you know, maybe Paris Hilton or something. How did your daughter end up in this position?
Well, it's just ridiculous. It's almost like a fairy tale story. But first of all, and I've brought this to many people's attention because that really bothered me, they're calling her white privileged socialite. I mean, have you seen me? I'm dark. And in fact, I look like a Belizean.
Yeah.
And she's not white privileged. We were poor growing up. She was poor. We lived on a farm. I mean, we lived in places where it froze on the inside of the walls and we'd wake up with our hair frozen to the wall. I mean, she grew up like that. And so when she finished high school and moved to Calgary, I think she was in Calgary at the time, my other son, who was living in Belize, invited her to go there and learn real estate. And she did. And she learned real estate. And through real estate transactions, she met Andrew Ashcroft. And that's how it began.
Okay. And people like in Canada, they wouldn't know who Andrew Ashcroft is, but how, like, maybe could you find like a Canadian comparison to like how his family is seen in that country, or would we even have one?
I don't even think so.
Would it maybe be like the Trumps before Donald Trump was president?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Something of that. Just a family that's connected to everything.
Everything. I mean, his father, Andrew's father, is involved in the UK Parliament. Reportedly, he helped fund David Cameron into power in England. You know, I mean, this is a level that I'm not familiar with. I'm just an ordinary person.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea even how these people think, although I am learning since I've been here how they think. It's been quite an education.
Well, let me ask this, Candace, over the last year, your life has become completely bonkers. Did you see any of this coming?
No.
Like what led to, you need to write a book or something like this, because there's just so much going on. How do you manage such strange these three things combined? Any one of them is more than the average person could handle.
Yeah, when you think about it, UFOs, Onagade, the Ashcroft. I have a good sense of humor. I mean, what else can you do? I mean, you just take, you try to just go with the flow. I try to stay balanced mentally and logical and reasonably, and you just go with the flow. That's it.
Wow.
You know, honestly, it's just been insane.
And of the three stories, the objects in the sky are still with you. Onagate is out of your life. That seems to be behind you. Your daughter's situation, that looks like that may still stretch up out for some time. Is there a certain, like, is there like a trial date or any time that you're looking forward to in her story?
It's been very difficult trying to find a lawyer. For instance, he's kept the children away from her. Under Belizean law, the law here, even if you're an unwed mother on the beach, Your children are yours, the woman. However, he has seemed to convince certain people in authority to allow him to have the children. And he won't even allow her to phone them anymore. Now he's told her that if she wants to talk to them on the phone, she needs to get a court order for that. I mean, it's just been nasty, mean, and we still haven't talked to him. We even the police here have said to us, why wouldn't you two act like two grown adults and just very quietly, discreetly have your breakup and let her have her things and, you know, have her children? And why are you doing this? And we've said to even to the police, we don't know why. We just don't understand. The other problem we're having is finding a family lawyer to represent her to try to get the children back. No, we've approached maybe 8 lawyers in this country, and not one of them will take her on.
I can only imagine when you say her name and who the case involves. I'm sure they're like, actually, I'm busy.
Right? Every one of them. Mm-hmm. Every one of them. So we have reached out to a lawyer in Canada, and we're really hoping that she will help us. We're really hoping.
Okay, well, I'll be rooting for you, as will the listeners, for you and your daughter.
Thank you.
And her children.
Thank you.
So we'll wrap it up there, but I appreciate so much of your time and for sharing your, what started as one incredible story has now turned into just such a complicated mess that is disturbing on a Godi side, and just it disturbing in a different way on your daughter's side.
Yeah.
I just hope there's something happens there, because it's a horrible situation, and to have anyone kept away from their kids is
it's painful,
cruel,
it's painful.
I don't know if you could see over my shoulder.
Oh yeah,
that's mine sleeping. So I get I don't like to be more than 10 feet away from mine. So I can only imagine your daughter feels the same way.
Oh, it you know, they're only 4. They're 4 years old.
Oh.
And each time we've seen them, we've had 2 visits now, because court ordered visits, where Andrew said that she's allowed to see them between 9 and 3 on a Saturday. And when they do come, we have it on video where they're saying, Mommy, we love you. And they don't understand. They don't understand. And it's so hard. Once they leave, we sit and cry. We cry our eyes out. It's so hard. It's so hard. So hard.
That's heartbreaking. I want to thank you for joining Candace and I for one of the busiest conversations in my recent memory. Candace clearly has a lot going on, and although some may roll her eyes at her UFO experiences, they are profound to her and clearly provide meaningful interactions with her spirituality. Her relationship with Anagate, her relationship with Morris Blanchard, that's something altogether different, and I hope he gets whatever help it is he needs. And as far as Candace's daughter, Jasmine Harton's situation, that's just an utter mess. I can only hope the truth comes out and her children are well cared for. And with that, I'll end this episode of Nighttime, but before we part, I have to give some thanks. First, I want to thank Candace for sharing her Stranger Than Fiction story with us. Next, a big shout out to Monty Data for contributing the music for this episode. It's a piece called Noir Tokyo. And lastly, a massive thank you to everyone who listens to Nighttime, as without your interest and your support, this show would be as pointless as it would be impossible. But with that said, keeping the show alive is and has always been an uphill battle. So if you want to help take a bit of weight off the show's back, please consider subscribing to the premium feed. For about the price of a cup of coffee, you can keep the show alive at patreon.com/nighttimepodcast. And with that said, let me thank the newest supporters of the show. Mary, Mora, and Naiza, thank you for your generous support. And for anyone else who'd like to help support the show but can't do it financially, you can give me a big hand by simply sharing the episodes across social media and letting your like-minded friends know about what we're doing here. If you have any story ideas or if you want to give feedback on the show, find me at nighttimepodcast.com/contact or on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and I'm often live on the Nighttime Podcast YouTube channel. So that's it. Until next time, take care of each other, hug your loved ones tight, and let me know if you see anything weird. What you're about to hear is an excerpt of a conversation Anagate's brother had with a CBC journalist.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.